introduce Rabbi Arye Leibowitz. Is certainly somebody who needs no introduction, not from my end, not from any end. If I would just kind of give one word of shevach, I know people speak about a lot about his accomplishments at the Rosh Torah. I would consider Rabbi. Can you hear me over there? And I would consider that Rabbi Leibowitz is a maturgman of our generation. He's someone that knows how to translate the Torah and give it over in such a palpable, clear way to both beginners and advanced Talmidim to really to be able to access the world of Chazal, the world of Rishonim, and our contemporary Paiskim. And so without further ado, we have Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi Lazarus. It's wonderful to learn together with you on the night before Yom Kippur, as we're heading into Erev Yom HaKippurim. So it's a time of significant Cheshbon HaNefesh. So I always appreciate the opportunity to share some ideas at such a powerful time, such an important time. Of course, I wish you personally continued Hatzlacha in leading your shul and your community. And the whole community should have a year of tremendous success and growth in Gashmias and Ruchnias. But let's try to gear our minds a little bit going into Yom HaKippurim. You know, when we look for inspiration or for guidance for Yom HaKippurim, we spend a great deal of time, you know, attending drashos, listening to inspirational speakers, hopefully engaging in serious Cheshbon HaNefesh and real tshuva. I would like to suggest maybe that there's a location where we can find inspiration that would be somewhat surprising, that you would not expect to find inspiration, and that is on Yom Kippur night, for each of us to take a look down and look at our own 2 feet. And when you see on your feet that there will not be shoes, there will not be leather shoes, hopefully, if we're observing the halacha properly. And by not wearing shoes, we are sending ourselves a very significant message by observing this halacha. Why is it that we avoid wearing normal shoes on Yom HaKippurim? What does this isser of Ne'ilas HaSandal tell us about the uniqueness of Yom HaKippurim? So I want to share with you 3 ideas that all 3 approaches are from a drasha that was given more than 50 years ago, or about 50, yeah, more than 50 years ago, probably close to 60 years ago, by Rabbi Norman Lamb, Zichrono Livracha. And I think I'd like to expand on each of the messages. Oh, I'm glad the connection got better. Okay, that's good. So I'd like to expand on each of these messages. So message number one, Rabbi Lamb in the drasha suggested, if you take a look at the Ramah in Orach Chaim Siman Reish Chaf Gimel Sivav, the Ramah tells us that there is a Jewish minhag that when somebody buys a new suit, when someone buys new clothing, you say tivla v'tischadesh, that, you know, it's the Jewish way of saying wear it well, meaning you should wear it so well that it should get worn out. So enjoy it and it should get worn out. Says the Ramah, haminhag lomar l'mi shalovesh beger chadash tivla v'tischadesh. The minhag is when someone buys new clothing, wear it out and enjoy it. V'yesh mi shekasav She'ein lomar kein al menalim o begadim anasim e'oros shel behema, that we do not say such an expression when someone buys new shoes or when they buy any clothing that's made from leather, from genuine animal skin. De'im kein o yutzrichin lohamis behema acheres tchila she'ichadish mena beged acher, because the bracha of tivla v'tischadish means you should wear this out to the point where you're going to have to buy a new one. Well, if I'm giving you a bracha that you're going to have to buy a new pair of shoes, that means another animal is going to have to die. They're going to have to kill another animal in order that you should be able to get a new pair of shoes. Uksiv v'rachmav al kamasav, and the Pasukim Tehillim says that Hashem has rachmanus on all of his creations. So for us to give a bracha that an animal is going to have to die, says the Rama, is inappropriate. He says, "Vinei atam chalush ma'od ve'inonira." Now the Rama, for his part, says, "Come on. You know, that's not, animals are here to serve us, and just like we kill animals in order to eat food, we kill animals in order to have clothing as well." He says it seems like a very weak reason, and it doesn't seem to be correct. Mikol makom, Rabbi Makpid Malzeh Shelo La'amro. Says the Ramah, there are a lot of people that are careful about this, not to say such an expression of Tivla V'tischadesh. So while the Ramah expresses reservations about this minhag, the Ramah acknowledges that the Jewish practice is not to get too excited about a pair of shoes. And maybe that is one of the reasons that we don't wear leather shoes on Yom HaKippurim. Because you see, what happens in Yom HaKippurim is, it is the culmination of 10 days where our sole focus was on Chaim. Our sole focus was on life. Zachreinu l'chaim, kosveinu b'sefer hachaim. We're asking Hashem for life and for more life, and we're demonstrating to the Ribbono Shalom that we appreciate the value of life, however low it may be, however low that form of life may be. So, in our attempt to humbly petition for our own lives, recognizing our failures and how ill-deserving we really genuinely are, we try to set the tone by showing Hashem we appreciate even brute, unintelligent forms of life. We appreciate the value of even an animal. And we therefore come in front of the Ribbono Shel and say, so we may be unworthy, we may be subpar, but if we're willing to appreciate even that which is beneath us, even that which is lower on the pecking order than us, and we're not going to wear shoes because shoes are a symbol of our mastery over the animal kingdom, over the animal world, so maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu should appreciate our lives. And I think this first message of Ni'ilas HaSandal is a particularly powerful message in the aftermath, or the tail end, hopefully, of the COVID pandemic. You know, there was so much time throughout the pandemic where we had to invoke rules that we normally don't. Rules like Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kalata Rekula, that human life is above anything else, that it overrides almost every halach in the Torah with very, very few exceptions. And there's a certain danger in applying that halacha. Of course we must. Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kalata Rekula, but sometimes when Pikuach Nefesh has been docha kala tarukula for so long, you know, there are two ways to look at it. Some people take the proper attitude, and that is, wow, even though kala tarukula is so important, every mitzvah is so critical, every yeheshme rabba is so critical, every opportunity to daven betzibur is so critical, every barovam hadras melech is so critical, it's all so important, but nevertheless, pikuach nefesh is even more important. And others don't have that attitude. Others make the mistake of saying, oh, if Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kala Tarukula, maybe Kala Tarukula is not as serious or as important as I thought it was. Maybe Kala Tarukula is not, maybe not davening in shul is okay. Maybe not being with a minion is all right. It's not such a big deal. One has to be careful. You know, Rav Yisrael Reisman has said on a number of occasions recently that people have gone with the mantra of, you know, just like the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted me to daven with a minion, he wanted me to not daven with a minion, and therefore it's all the same. That the first half of the sentence is true, but therefore it's all the same is not true. That's not true. It's not all the same. There is a cost to having pushed off Kala Tarukula, and we should appreciate, we should come out of this with an appreciation of just the value of life. And that's why what we're asking for is so important. The Zachreinu L'chaim that we're saying is so critical. I came across recently just an unbelievable story of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, told by his grandson, by Rav Soloveitchik. So you know it's a reliable story because it's in the family. And he said that in, I think it was 1905 or 1906, in Brisk, there was a young boy who had taken some sort of a small explosive device and had thrown it at the Governor General of Warsaw. And this boy was a Bundist. He was, in our terms, an enemy of the Jewish people. He was worse than an atheist, a 16-year-old kid. And word got to Reb Chaim, as they had just begun Kol Nidre, on Yom Kippur night, on Kol Nidre night, word got to Reb Chaim that they had sentenced the boy to death, and he was going to die in 24 hours. He was a boy from Brisk, he was a Jewish boy, but he was, again, a Bundist, someone that was very, very far from a friend of the religious community. So what did Reb Chaim do? So what would we do? I can tell you what I would have done. I would have maybe said, given a clap on the bima and said, okay, everyone, we should say a kapitel tillim with all of our might, with all of our heart, to try to save this boy. And then if they would have told me, nah, he's a Bundist, he's an enemy of Torah, and so I would have said, okay, maybe not with all our might. Say tillim, but maybe not with too much strength. Not with... What did Reb Chaim do? Reb Chaim came, gave a clap on the bima, and said, everybody must go home right now. Gather whatever money you're able to gather. Everyone left the main shul in Brisk on Kol Nidre night without reciting Kol Nidre. By the instruction of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, went home, gathered money, brought money to the shul. He then sent the gaboyim to every shul in all of Brisk. And he, with the tzivoy, that Kol Nidre may not be recited in any shul in Brisk tonight, because everybody must go home and get money together. And they gathered together 3,000 rubles, and they bribed the right official, and there was a police commissioner that they were able to bribe with 3,000 rubles, who then crossed himself and swore that the boy was with him in Brisk on the day that the crime was supposed to be committed, giving the boy an alibi. And Reb Chaim traveled on Yom Kippur morning together with this police commissioner on Yom Kippur morning on a train in order to save this boy. So what did he do? He canceled Kol Nidre for all of Brisk. And again, Brisk is not, you know, it's not a community like where I am in the Five Towns or South Bend or anywhere else. This was Brisk. This was, you know, this was a pretty serious group of people. He canceled Kol Nidre for an entire community. He traveled on a train on Yom Kippur instead of being in shul on Yom Kippur to save that one criminal apikores, to save a person like of that nature. That is what it means to really value pikuach nefesh as opposed to devaluing Kol HaTorah Kula. It's not because Reb Chaim didn't believe in the value of Yom HaKippurim, the value of a Kol Nidre night, and the value of having a community together. So that's message number one of Ne'ilas HaSandal. We don't wear shoes as a way of signaling to the Ribbono Shel Olam that all life means something to us, and therefore our unworthy lives, we hope, mean something to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Message number two, Rabbi Lam quotes from his grandfather, who was a great Talmud Chacham, that many poskim, when they speak about shoes, define shoes, and this is like one of the number one shailas that Rabbanim get around now and right before Tisha B'Av, they define shoes not by whether they're made of leather or not, but by whether you can feel the terrain under your feet. Generally speaking, the accepted opinion of poskim in America, I think at least, is the other way, that we define shoes by whether it's made out of leather or not, but there are many serious poskim that define shoes as whether you can feel the terrain under your feet. I could say my Rebbe, Mariv Rabbi, Rav Shechter Shlita, wears socks. He doesn't wear sneakers, he doesn't wear Crocs, he wears socks where he could feel the terrain under his feet. He could feel the carpet in the Beis Medrash, he could feel the tiles on the floor on the way into to the Beis Medrash, he could feel the terrain under his feet. The prohibition of Ne'ilas HaSandal, when viewed from this perspective, is geared toward increasing our sensitivity to our surroundings. We can walk head held high without even realizing that we're trampling on dozens of small items. You walk down the street, did you crush a bug? You have no idea. Try it barefoot, you'll have an idea, right? You'll feel something. You'll feel that they will feel very different. The idea of Ne'ilas HaSandal brings us to a certain level of sensitivity to our environment. A person can so close himself off from his environment that he runs roughshod over entire areas of life. The Gemara at the end of Maseches Sukkah, for those who are doing Daf Yomi, we just finished Maseches Sukkah a couple of weeks ago, the Gemara tells the story of a child who came from a prestigious family of Kohanim, a young lady, but then she went off the Derech and she married a non-Jewish man. And the Gemara tells us, Tan Rabbanan, Maisa b'Miriam bas Bilga, Shehimira Dasa. This woman, Miriam bas Bilga, had gone off the path. She married a Greek officer. And the Greeks entered the Heichal. She was kicking with her shoe on the Mizbeach. Lucus, Lucus. And she was screaming, you wolf, you wolf. To what end are you going to continue to try to wipe out the money of the Jewish people? And you're not going to be there for them in their time of need. Now, it's such an interesting thing. What a detail to add in to that story. Obviously, it's tragic that a girl who grew up in a religious environment, in a Jewish environment, would turn out like this, to have such anger, such animosity toward our religion, toward our avoda. But why does anyone have to add in that detail? She hit the Mizbeach with her shoe. She used her shoe to demonstrate what her problem was. Maybe Chazal are showing us the symbolism of a shoe and demonstrating one of the leading causes for children to follow the path of Nebuch, to follow the path of Miriam Bas Bilga, of this woman. Her name was Miriam. Miriam reflects a certain sensitive soul, like the original Miriam, who wouldn't allow her brother to be abandoned or her parents to split because she was such a sensitive person. Her very criticism suggests that she can't stand to watch Jewish people suffer. What was she saying as she was banging with her shoe on the Mizbeach? Look what you're doing to the Jewish people! You're taking all the money of the Jewish people! Her argument wasn't against the religion. Her argument was in defense of the Jewish people. She may have felt that her parents were not attuned to her own feelings, or that her teachers were not attuned to her own feelings. They walked over the terrain of her heart with these stiff leather shoes where they couldn't feel sensitively what exactly it is that they were stepping on. You know, the very often when you have people who are turned off, and it's a big story now within the Frum community because the media has picked up a lot in the social media and even Netflix and movie producers have picked up a lot on this phenomenon of off the derech, of people who have abandoned the Orthodox community. Very often, not always, but very often, the person in question has issues that were really never addressed, questions that were never answered, sensitivity that was never shown to a difficult situation. I know a fellow who works with, is a psychologist, and he works with people who leave observant Judaism. He said almost all of them were abused in some place or another and did not get a proper response to having suffered that abuse. We remove our shoes on Yom Kippur to remind ourselves of the feeling of our fellow Jews, young and old, and to be sensitive to all that they may feel. It's symbolic of the fact that we now feel everything. Without our shoes, we feel all of the terrain under our feet. You know, Chazal say that we pass in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam and Rosh Hashanah, we say it in the Sanat Tokef, Kibbenei Maron. And the Gemara gives three explanations what it means, Kibbenei Maron. All three explanations just mean we go one by one. But if you look at what the three explanations the Gemara gives, it's we go out like sheep that are going out of the corral one by one. Or we're going out like people who are climbing up a mountain and there's a narrow pathway that they have to get through that they can only fit one by one. Or soldiers going out to fight in David HaMelech's wars one by one. All three of those examples are not only indicate that it's one by one, they're all a line. It's not just that I have to pass through by myself. It's that there's someone right in front of me and there's someone right behind me. And part of the judgment on Rosh Hashanah and the hopeful kapara on Yom Kippurim is, are we aware of the people right in front of us and the people right behind us? Are we aware of the other people in the line? And maybe that's the min of Korin Shulchan Aruch to ask mechila on Erev Yom Kippurim, that we make sure that we have a sensitivity and an awareness. Mechila is not by getting on a mass text, you know, a broadcast WhatsApp, right? Is that what they call it? Where you broadcast to all of your contacts. I have Bli Ayin Hara, you know, I have so many contacts in my phone. We were just trying to figure out when my son got engaged recently, so I had to send out we were thinking, should I send out an invitation to the Vart, to all of my contacts? There are 2,900 contacts in my phone. I was not going to send out a broadcast, So what do you do for Mechila? So 2,900 people will get some cheesy statement from me. I hope I didn't offend you, and if I did, I'm really sorry. Please be mochali. Look, given the option of calling all 2,900 people, obviously that would be impossible, but the idea that's really the minhag, that's not true. That's not really the minhag. The minhag is to actually talk to another person, be sensitive to what we did to actually hurt them, and ask for mechila in a genuine and serious way. That's what we're trying to express before Rosh Hashanah, that we're not running roughshod over other people's lives. Rav Aaron Lapiansky, the Chashev Rosh Hashiva from Silver Spring, recently told us, we had a group of Rabbanim that had the privilege to meet with him, and he told us that that he was doing a like a question answer session with a group of junior high school boys. And one of the boys, they saw the cover they were giving to a Rosh Yeshiva. One of the boys raised his hand and said, "How do you become a Rosh Yeshiva?" Like he liked it. Like he liked how everyone stood for him. And that, how do you become a Rosh Yeshiva? So Vlapiansky said, "You should know, it doesn't say anywhere that you're supposed to be a Rosh Yeshiva. There's nowhere in Jewish literature, there's nowhere in the Svarim HaKadoshim that a person is supposed to be a Rosh Yeshiva. But you know what it does say? It speaks a lot about the value of being a Marbitz Torah. And I'll tell you how to be a Marbitz Torah. You're in seventh grade, look around your classroom, find a boy who's struggling with learning in your class, and help him out on your free time. And then you'll be a Marbitz Torah. And that's more important than being a Rosh Yeshiva. Because it doesn't say anywhere that you have to be a Rosh Yeshiva to be a Marbitz Torah. Pay attention to the people in front of you, the people behind you. Have the sensitivity as if we're not wearing shoes on our feet, that we feel everything that we're stepping on as we walk by." And then there's a third, and perhaps even a most profound message to the Isra of Ni'ilas HaSandal. Bare feet can actually represent two completely opposite ideas. On the one hand, in holy places, we don't wear shoes. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua, they were each told separately, "Shol na alecha me'al raglecha," take off your shoes, "ki ha'makom asher atah omeda lav ad mas kodeshu," because you're on holy ground. When we enter the Mikdash, we don't wear shoes. On the other hand, an avel doesn't wear shoes. A mace is not buried in shoes. So bare feet simultaneously represent two opposites: the potential for a transcendent level of kedusha, and the potential for the worst kind of sadness. Chayei Olam on the one hand, and Misa on the other hand. And maybe that is the message of Yom HaKippurim, that we're at this most volatile time, this polarizing potential of the day. You know, we don't have to spell it all out, but we think about everything that's happened. Each year we could do it. Think about everything that's happened over the past year, successes and failures, tragedies and triumphs, and you realize that it's all being decided right now, and it can go in such different directions. Two people who sat right next to each other in shul, I know in my shul, at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic, we lost a very close friend, and they set up in shul right next to me. His shtender is sitting there in an empty seat, and our shul is named after him. And the entire Rosh Hashanah, it's just so jarring to think about who's not here anymore. It's so jarring to think about how just a year earlier or 2 years earlier, two people sitting right next to each other in shul, each one having very similar lives to each other, very similar professional lives, very similar family lives. And one of them is moving on and experiencing simchas and maybe promotions at work and enjoying nachas from the children, and the other one is no longer there. That potential, that's in Yom Kippur. That potential for shoes to be the greatest success or the greatest tragedy, the greatest sadness. It's all right there. Our footwear tells us the sobering and powerful story of the day. We don't yet know why we aren't wearing shoes. We can't even explain it yet. We're not sure. Are we not wearing shoes because Makom Asher Atah Omeda Lav is Admas Kodesh, and you're in a place, you're on the precipice of great Kedusha. You're like Moshe Rabbeinu at the Sneh. You're about to enter the Mikdash. Or is the lack of footwear, because you can't even say the other side, that a person is about to experience the opposite? Is it because we're in mourning, or because we're experiencing sublime holiness? And that's the question that we have to daven for the proper answer. If you look at the rest of your outfit tomorrow night, you'll find the same message. We're wearing a kittel, the symbol of freedom, of purity, and avoda, but also of death shrouds. Someone told me that, my son actually told me that my future mechutin wanted to know if he wanted him to buy him a kittel, or he preferred that I bought my son a kittel. I said, whatever he wants, it's fine by me. He said, no, because his other mechutin, Dafka, didn't want the shver to buy the kittel, because he didn't like the idea of the shver buying the death shrouds. I said, that's a little bit morose, and I would say, buy him what he's going to wear at the Pesach Seder every year. It's a wonderful thing. In the Stami, he'll be having many Pesach Seder and many, many Yom Kippurs together, so it's a nice thing. But they're both true. it's up to us to determine which applies to us. So in Yom Kippur, we don't remove our shoes because HaMakom Asher Atah Omed Alav Ad Maskodeshu. We make the makom that we tread by virtue of the fact that we walk on it into Ad Maskodesh. We are the source of the Kedusha. So Yom Kippur for us has to be a day that we realize our very life is at stake. We appreciate the value of each moment of life. We appreciate all life forms. We zachreinu l'chaim, kasveinu b'sefer chaim. Everything is about chaim, chaim, chaim. It's a day that we commit also to feel those tiny stones of other people's emotions and our own detailed tradition, even if we may obliviously tread on them year-round. But most of all, the day of Yom Kippur is the day that we make our choice. Kedusha v'tahara o avi avos atuma. Hachayim o hamaves. And in just a day from now, in 24 hours from now, less than 24 hours from now, we're all going to be screaming Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuso Li'olam Va'ed out loud. A definitive declaration of our choice to become malachim. And on Yom Kippur, we make that declaration, and if we do so effectively, Be'ezras Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam, will give us an entire year to prove why he made the right choice by granting us, Be'ezras Hashem, a Gemar Chasima Tova.